I am Planta on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Beginning tonight and opening tomorrow night, Friday the 7th of February, at the Gateway Theatre in Richmond, is the Western Canadian premiere of Straight White Men. It is a play by the groundbreaking and dynamic playwright Young Jean Lee. It is a hilarious play that explores privilege, the ubiquitous male, white, straight version. Joining me now is Peter Anderson. He's one of the production stars. He joins me to talk about his character, who's got three sons who come together at Christmas. They comport themselves as guys would be expected. They confront what is expected of them as sons and as white males. The production features Mr. Anderson, Kim Villagante, Raven John, Daniel Martin, Carlo Marx, and Sebastian Archibald. Kim and Raven are the play's hosts, or as the playwright directed, persons in charge. Peter Anderson's recent credits include Titus Bufonius and Butcher, The Coyotes, The Overcoat, and The Number 14. His film and television credits include The Stand, Falling for Vermont, The Man in the High Castle, and Supernatural. He is a graduate of the University of Michigan and the Delarte School of Physical Theater. He is the recipient of 8 Jesse Awards. Straight White Men is directed by Chelsea Haberlin of It's a Zoo and Faye Nass of the Frank Theater. The show runs until the 15th of February. Visit gatewaytheater.com for tickets and information. Please welcome to the Planta Online program, Peter Anderson. Mr. Anderson, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So we're talking just a few days before the show begins, before the show opens. The other play that Young Jean Lee of hers that was produced recently, The Shipment, that was in the fall. That got quite a good response, didn't it? I mean, people were walking out, people were standing up in the middle of the show and the sort, weren't they?
Yeah. She's quite a innovative and daring playwright. And one of the things she does is write the things she's most scared to write. From play to play, she's kind of the darling of avant-garde theater in New York, and from play to play, it's radically different. And the thing that's radically different about this one is that it's a very traditional play, three-act structure, which for her was in line with the theme of straight white men, so she chose the most straight, whitest male dramatic structure.
Yeah, and so what about her and about this work in particular that is, I would hate to say this, but I mean, it seems necessary, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah, I think so. I love her take on it, and I think the play is surprising in that when you hear straight white men, you think it might be this broad side attack on toxic masculinity, of which there is certainly a plethora of examples to attack, but she actually approaches it with a lot of compassion, and it's almost a poignant examination of the fact that us straight white men for years and thousands of years have been the default human, and now suddenly we're slapped with a label, which other people have labored under, being labeled, and a label never, of course, fully tells the story of who you are. And so she's kind of looking at that. And the other thing I read, she asked herself, if I woke up in the body of a straight white male, but with my consciousness, what would I do? And that's kind of the question that's posed in this play.
Yeah. And so you're Ed. And how many sons have you got in the show?
I have 3 sons. It's all home for Christmas. The oldest son, Matt, the oldest and brightest, has moved home to take care of me and to help pay off his student loans. He's working at various temp jobs for community organizations, making copies. The middle son, Jake, is a hotshot banker, recently divorced from his black wife. He has 2 kids. And Drew, the youngest, is an award-winning novelist who's a big proponent of therapy, which has helped him find his way.
So when the three of you get together, when Ed and his 3 adult sons get together, the sort of banter that they engage in, I mean, it's recognizable, isn't it?
It's very recognizable. It starts out as very much a broad comedy, really, of adolescent hijinks as the boys kind of regress, and there's a lot of gentle, loving trash talking.
Uh-huh.
I also want to stress that this is a family that's been raised to be very aware of their privileges. Their deceased mother repurposed a Monopoly game in their youth, called it Privilege, instead of chance cards and community chess cards, it's denial and excuses cards. One example being an excuses card. What I said wasn't racist/sexist/homophobic because I was joking. Pay $50 to the lesbian and gay community center.
I interviewed an author one time
who
told me he had a mother exactly like that.
Right.
Who even banned the game Monopoly because it brought out, she thought, the sort of competitiveness that she didn't want her children to be, you know, to grow up with.
Right, right. So that's very much the what these boys, how they've been raised, and it's three acts, mm-hmm. or three scenes. It's no way to play. This play without intermission.
Uh-huh.
At the end of the first act, at their Chinese takeout Christmas dinner, Matt, the oldest and brightest, suddenly cries. And it's a kind of play. I don't think I'm not too worried about giving away plot spoilers because it's so nuanced in the discussions that come up. And so Matt crying triggers a whole cascade of conflict and discussion and arguments amongst the dad and the other two sons as they try to figure out what's going on with him, because suddenly he's not, even though they've been raised, it's very self-aware, they're still very much holding to the code of conduct of straight white men and what it means to be successful and achieve. And here's Matt, who's got a PhD from Stanford, BA from Harvard, he's not running a nonprofit organization. He's just doing a temp job, and he's doing women's work. He's taking care of his dad, cleaning the house, making the meals, and they can't figure out why, what's going on with him. Drew, the youngest, thinks he needs therapy. Jake, the middle one, thinks he's martyring himself because whenever a white man succeeds, it's taking away a position that a person of color
had.
Matt isn't not depressed. He's perfectly happy, just trying to be useful is what he says.
Yeah. And so there's obviously a lot of discussion amongst the characters.
Mm-hmm.
What is it like for you all as actors, as you're rehearsing and preparing for opening? Are you guys having the same sort of discussions as well about, say, the themes in the piece?
Oh, very much so, yeah. And we're also, the whole piece is framed by two people in charge.
Uh-huh.
The playwright specified they be non-binary people of color, and so they're part of our discussion, and they provide another perspective.
So these are the roles that Kim and Raven play. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. The first time the play was done, those characters weren't in the play.
Uh-huh.
But Young Gene Lee played loud female rap music with explicit lyrics prior to the show, and she meant it just innocently being the world outside the straight white men, but it outraged patrons off Broadway. They were furious that suddenly the space was not a welcoming conventional theater space.
So
I think she wrote these characters as a way to welcome the audience a bit. They have a great line. They say, we're here to try and see if we can have some understanding for straight white men, something we wish everyone would do for us. It chokes me up when I hear that line.
You know, that it's a beautiful line in that it just shows, you know, there is something lacking in our culture, in the discussion, in the zeitgeist, if you will. And though it's changing, I don't think it's changing fast enough.
I just read the book White Fragility.
Which
is fascinating And, you know, yes, so we have been talking, examining our own particular blind spots. And being the oldest cast member, I have a lot of points of agreement with my character, Ed.
Uh-huh.
A few disagreements, but I try not to, never want to judge a character I'm playing. But, you know, he's actually a little bit older than I am. He's more of the greatest generation, the World War II.
Right, right.
Keep your head down and soldier on. And who believes, you know, in color blindness, like skin
yeah.
color shouldn't have anything to do with it, which is an admirable desire. And yet, at what point does that deny a person of color's experience?
Mm.
You know, it's fascinating. I'm sure
yeah.
it's going to generate lots of discussion.
And the idea that because I read this in the notes that I was sent about the piece, Yang Jin Lee speaks about a lack of compassion in our society today,
right?
And I guess a lack of understanding at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if there isn't that, if there isn't compassion, I should say, there's no way we can understand another person.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, in this moment where white male privilege is being, I guess, dealt with or even looked at,
mm-hmm.
one wonders what, I mean, how has it changed? Do you think we go back to the same old or is something fundamentally different with the way we are going forward, say?
Well, my wife always calls me the optimist. I would like to think that we're, you know, that a new paradigm is being forged.
Uh-huh.
And I sincerely hope some of the political things happening to the south of us are kind of a last dying gasp.
Sure,
of
yeah,
white
yeah.
privilege. But, you know, I'm at the same time, it's not just going to go away. But I think, I think there is cause for hope.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
You mentioned a moment ago that you're the oldest member of the cast.
Yeah.
What is it like working with people who are obviously younger than you are? I mean, does that strike a chord in terms of, for you, in terms of some of the themes in the show, say?
Yeah, it does. As I said, the whole, I mean, a lot of Ed's arguments I can really get behind when he's questioning the rhetoric. I mean, she's done some great things as the banker who is living the most capitalist striving life, speaks the most pointed social justice arguments, and the dad is calling him on that. And dealing with the things, you know, younger people don't have the experiences I had, which is kind of what I think Yang Jin Lee is talking about. Plight of the straight white man, you know, that worried about the label that doesn't denies their experience, and I think she's threaded a really careful needle here with, you know, not hating or blaming straight white men for the world's problems, but at the same time not pitying them for their privilege or portraying them as victims, which is I think what white fragility is about, you know, that sense of when your position of power or privilege gets questioned, it's easy to think, oh my God, I'm a victim.
But, yeah.
Really not the case. And working with younger people, I'm really the privileged one who grew up in a time when, you know, there were a lot more paying theater jobs to be had. I listened to your interview with Jen Griffin, you know, a time when it was affordable to live in this city. I often think to myself, boy, if I was young, I don't know if I would have been able to continue in theater.
Yeah. The other thing that I was just thinking about, I mean, back to this idea of compassion and trying to understand the other.
Yes.
We so need it, don't we? Because we disagree with one another so much. And I'm curious to know if you or any other cast members have I don't know, learned something from this experience of doing this show.
I would hope so. I don't know. We're still doing it. We're still in it.
Yeah.
And we're going to a great thing that it's a zoo company that's producing this with the Gateway. The great thing they're doing is after every single show, we're going to have a Q&A that instead of calling it a talk back, they're calling it a talk forward.
Mm.
And they're going to bring in various experts or people with an interest in either whiteness or straightness or maleness and to lead a discussion, which I think will, again, be very informative. I think one of the things is to shut up and listen.
Yeah.
One thing I need to learn is to hear other people and not get defensive when they're talking about systemic injustices and racism. You know, it's easy to say, "Oh, but I'm not like that." That's often not what the people are saying, but that's one can often take it like that. A funny little anecdote, when young Jean Lee was first writing this, she was meeting with a lot of her friends, women and queer playwrights, and they talked a lot about the things they hated about straight white men, and young Jean Lee said, "Okay, let's make a list of what you would like in a straight white man." So she took this list and created the character of Matt, and then when she brought the play back and they read it, they all hated the character. and she said that even amongst those who are, the most invested in social justice, there is still this ingrained values of the patriarchy that hates a loser more than a jerk, which I found really fascinating. And that's kind of the play ends with this very great open-ended question where you don't know, it's left open. And I think she said somewhere she wants the audience to leave unsatisfied.
Yeah, and as an audience member, I mean, those are feelings that I think, I don't know, I just can't wait to see the show and try to figure out how one feels about it, And that's the wonderful thing about a piece like this, that it can make you do that, when you expect something, to be pleasant or memorable or happy even.
Right. And it does that at the same time. Like I say, it has a lot of great broad comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's masterfully able to turn this corner from that into this tragicomic examination of an existential angst.
Peter, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. There's a lot of people in this town. Can't wait to see this show. Break a leg, as they say. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks very much. Pleasure speaking to you, too.
The website for tickets and information is at gatewaytheater.com. Straight White Men is at the Gateway there in Richmond until the 15th of February. Peter Anderson, one of its stars, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.